Session number 17675, Sergeant Frederick White, Reel 7.
Sergeant White, Reel 7. We were discussing the Bren gun. Did you find it a comfortable weapon to use?
Yes, I did do.
What about the people you were instructing? Did they take to it?
Yes. Yes, they all seemed to do very well. They all thanked me very much at the end of the course, what I put them through.
What about stripping and cleaning and maintaining the Bren gun? How did it compare?
Well, I've found it, after I've mastered it, very good to do.
Had you had experience on the Lewis gun at
no,
all?
No, I didn't know on the Lewis gun. No.
So you were found yourself as band sergeant with lots of extra duties, conducting and also taking part, presumably, in managing the band.
Yes.
And sorting it out. And you mentioned that in November 1941 the band was changed, it was reformed. What happened at that stage?
It must have been not long, September 1941, the band was disbanded.
Disbanded? Why was that? What was the reason?
Everybody had to be put on a war footing. That's what that was the idea of it. I think the colonels, people like that, were known we were going to leave India very soon.
Did you have any suspicions that you might be moving on somewhere else?
Not straight away, not when we were first disbanded. So I kept the stretcher bearers.
Yes.
Right. And the rest of them then went to the companies.
They went as riflemen, did they?
Just as riflemen. Oh. Although one the corporals went as in the intelligence section, another one went into mortars, where he went as a bandsman and came back as a corporal.
How did you go about picking the men you were going to keep in the medical section as stretcher bearers?
Well, that's rather a peculiar question, because going back further, you come in as a boy, and then you come on man service, you're still a private.
Yes.
Now, I forget the exact number, but the actual bandsman is an appointment.
Not a rank.
No, it's an appointment. And so many of the band then get this appointment recommended by the bandmaster and band sergeant. And these then would be the stretcher bearers when called upon. You only allowed, I think it was 20 bandsmen. And the rest of them would have to go back to duty. No, that's I didn't really pick them on the spot. They'd been done years before and we became bandsmen.
How many of them were there in your stretcher bearers party?
I had 20 of them.
20?
Yes. And incidentally, when I got made sergeant, it comes on your battalion orders, promoted sergeant, and immediately after that is appointed band sergeant.
What did you have to do with the stretcher bearers then during this time when the band was?
Well, we did more training, how to move wounded around on the stretchers and things like that, across trenches or rough country and things like that, that type of thing. More how to treat wounds. That type of thing. But now and again, we got back to something that happened before about doing enemy for the battalion. And I always remember one occasion, the OC of the company wanted to take his out on a manoeuvre with us. And he said, what did we do? He says, I'll take you out by transport to a certain area. And we set up an ambush. And they were coming through with vehicles, motorised, and it was on a narrow lane, cultivated country, and we set up this ambush there, and of course they rode straight into it. We were firing blanks.
Naturally.
And the OC was doing umpire, so he had his own officers had to do the manoeuvres with the company. Well, we didn't stay there, that ambusher, because they all immediately started spreading out, and they probably could have surrounded us. So we immediately withdrew with this one vehicle, what we had, and went over a canal. And on this canal, there's one bridge. And lo and behold, we took up a position there, and when they came to the bridge, we opened fire. So they stopped them coming across. And this went on the rest of the day. They didn't know what to do. So it came night time. So I left a small party at the bridge that I know that we're still there. Before it got dark, I'd gone along the canal and found one place where we could wade across it. So when it was dark, well into the night, this is what we did. And we crept into their camp, and we captured the Sergeant Major, who incidentally was a previous band sergeant.
And he was Company Sergeant Major?
He was Company Sergeant Major, going to duty years beforehand, and got one of their vehicles and drove off with it over the bridge into our own lines. I think the OC of the company, although he was doing umpire, was most furious that we'd done it, but we had done. So next morning he said, you've got to withdraw. He said, the morale over that other side is not very good. So we were then spread out into the country. Myself and a few others, we went into a cornfield and just stayed there. And they had about three or four men going round this cornfield, just looking. So I see which way we're going, so we went to the other side, went from the come, and we captured them. So after that, it was getting time going on in the day, so we thought, well, we retired to, it was just on the edge of a village, and we just sat down there till they come and rounded us up.
Sounds like a good game of soldiers.
It was.
When you set up your ambush to catch the motorised company on the move, how did you lay your men out? What sort of pattern did you have them in?
It's coming through at narrow lane. It was a very small embankment on either side of it. And I put half the men on each side. And when I saw the vehicles coming, then I gave the command to fire.
How close did you let them get before you opened fire?
Oh, I should say only about 20 yards. I let them get quite close. Mm. Of course, the first vehicle, we've got caught all the bullets if it had been.
Absolutely. How many vehicles were they in?
Oh, I can't believe there must have been about a dozen vehicles. So of course, they couldn't pass the vehicle if it was sort of broke down, but the, at least of all, they start getting the sense then to get out and spread around.
They couldn't pass because the vehicle was on the narrow road?
No.
And how many men did you have? About 20, did you say, in your party?
About 20 men, yes. Yeah.
Just with rifles? Or with
just rifles, yes.
Was this how you'd have done it if you'd been in action, that same sort of...
Yeah, I think so. Yes, coming through a narrow lane like that was a perfect place to ambush them, I thought.
Where did you put your own vehicle?
It was with the umpire all the time, really, but that was about 100 yards further down, and there was a bend then, they couldn't see it.
So it was out of sight, but quite close to where you
yes.
were.
Yes. So when I saw the other troops in the other vehicles were spreading out, I thought it was about time we got out of it.
So roughly how long would it be, do you think, between springing the ambush and you going back to your own vehicle and driving off?
Only a few minutes.
Yeah. So just long enough for them to start deploying.
Yes.
And then you're away. Mm. What about when you got to the bridge that you held? How were you laid out on the far side of that?
Well, it was quite thick, cultivated country there, and we could be quite well hidden.
You were in the crops.
Yeah, in the crops there, laying down there. And, of course, directly they showed us anything on the bridge there, of course, we opened fire. Yeah. Of course, the umpire was there and said, "You've had it."
This was the battalion commander.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you had to give up in the end because
We had to. I suppose eventually they would have had to force their way across the bridge somehow or the other.
Was this what sort of bridge was it?
It's a stone bridge. Mm.
How wide was it? Any idea? One vehicle wide or two vehicles
wide?
Oh,
no, it's only about one vehicle wide. Yes, quite small as that goes. So difficult to pass, in actual fact, unless they had some mortars or something to bomb us out, which they didn't have. That's what would have happened, wouldn't it?
Well, they probably have used their mortars and light machine guns, wouldn't they, too? Mm. And they might have set the crops on fire if they'd been mortaring.
Yes, yes.
But this sounds like fairly realistic tactical training you were doing.
Mm.
But I don't know, where did you learn your tactics?
They know of. That's what I thought to do, it was all.
Just picked it up naturally. Mm. So this was one of your activities as a stretcher bearer party. You were providing enemy. Do you remember any other occasions when you did that?
Yes, but not on quite a big scale as that, though. Mm. That one there. Matter of fact, it was only just taking up positions, and they said, "Well, the enemy's there," and the company usually only a company had taken up positions, and didn't seem to be much in it really.
Well, this is training at what, company level and
platoon
level?
The company level, yes, when we was involved.
Yeah. And you'd said that you did more medical training. Was there anything about the medical training that was new?
Techniques? No, it's only revision all the time, it was.
Continuation training. Oh. Yeah.
The only other thing, I don't know whether I gave it to you there, at that time, I'd mentioned about a lot of Anglo-Indians there.
Yes.
And some of these had joined up, as I say. Not to our regiment, but in the RAMC.
Yeah.
And, of course, they was doing their... They're going to become medical orderlies in a hospital or something like that.
Yes.
But they had to have some training, discipline and things like that. And lo and behold, I got picked for that as well. There was about 20 of them. And of course, I had to have them from scratch.
Do you mean they had no knowledge at all?
No knowledge at all. And they wasn't very fit either. So I took them on PT, rifle drill, marching. I made them do route marches, cross-country running, to get them fit as well, that type of thing. And personally, I think I gave them a bit of a rough time, but it was needed, though, without being cruel or anything like that. But, I mean, what they did, I was doing myself.
Did they complain about the PT or the...
But some months later, when we was in Baghdad, lo and behold, there was a place, there was a type of canteen there, and several of these Anglo-Indians were there. And they came up to me, shook hands with me, they said, "Thank you for training us so well, otherwise we've been lost here."
So they did appreciate the
value.
They
appreciated it in the end.
Yeah. How were they at doing the medical side of things? Did they pick that up fairly quickly?
Well, I'll take it that I had nothing to do with that side of it. Oh. That was done by the medical officer there.
Oh, right. So you were just giving them some discipline and making them fit.
Yes.
Yeah. What about doing the drill? Were they good at drill?
Well, they wasn't very good at all. I mean, in their Finnish thing, they wasn't called on to do drill.
Mm.
But I think the drill was partly to install discipline with them.
Yes. And did they accept the discipline?
Oh, yes, in the end. Oh, yes, they did do.
How long did you have with them?
I had them for about a month. Of course, I wasn't with them all day because they were doing their other medical training there. It was mostly mornings I had them.
Right. Did they live in the barracks while they were being trained?
Yes, but not in our barracks. There was somewhere where they... There was a hospital there, and they was in the compound there somewhere.
When you took them out on cross-country runs, how far would you go with them?
Oh, 3 or 4 miles. Not, won't overdo it, but...
But did you build it up, you know, from to longer distances? Mm.
I mean, we start off by doing, with army boots on, very PT kit, doing fast walking.
Yes.
Strengthen the legs up and that type of thing. Mm. And then get into running.
What about marching? How far would you take them on a route march?
Oh, I didn't take them all that far. About eight miles, that was all, just to get them used to doing some marching.
What about stretcher drills? Did you have them carrying stretchers over rough ground or anything like
that?
No,
I didn't. No, not with stretcher bearers, no. Mm.
Do you know what sort of jobs they've been doing in civilian life?
Most of them worked on the railway. Lots of them did. I wouldn't say every individual what I was on the squad did do, otherwise I wouldn't know. But
were they young people?
Yes, yes, fairly young.
Had they been conscripted or were they volunteers? Do you know?
They're all volunteers.
Did you have any other jobs like that while you were in India?
No, that was the only one there.
Sounds as though you had quite a wide variety of duties, really.
Yes, I did too,
connected with the band and then with other things too. Mm. And I think September the band broke up, but it was back in November. How did that happen?
Well, then came the orders that we were to leave India.
Yes.
And this only happened, I should say, a week before we left. They said the order came through from Winston Churchill that the army should reform the bands for morale purposes. It's not only just our band, I think this happened in England as well.
So throughout the army then?
Throughout the army, that the bands to reform. Which they did do, not only ours. And then that was the reason. The only thing is, the bandmaster had been without work. He had nothing to do all this time. And was so overjoyed, he went out with some friends from Sans Mess somewhere down there into Lahore. And he had a motor car accident. And he got smashed up. Not killed or anything like that, but I mean, he did get over it in the end, but he wasn't fit enough to leave with us. So I then had to do acting bandmaster from that spot onwards. Organised the band for going overseas.
Did it go back to its original strength when it was reformed?
Yes. Now, that was another thing that happened. It all fell on my shoulders. I said, I want everybody back. And the RSM said to me, you can't have these people, some moment got promotion. I said, then we don't have a band. So they gave way and I got everybody back.
Were they happy to be back in the band?
Yes, I think so, because you mugged your old friends again.
How long did it take to actually get them back and up and running?
Well, we only had a week to do it in.
But I mean, presumably they hadn't been practising.
No, they hadn't been practising at all. Who was a bit out of date on a sort of thing. But
how long did it take to get them back up to speed on their musical?
Oh, it doesn't take long, isn't it? No. They weren't out of action all that long.
Mm.
I needed about 3 days with them to do any practice with them, you know, to get their in with their instruments again. Of course, then we had to pack everything up, all the music library and all that type of thing. And off we went with the regiment, embarked at Karachi.
How long did it take to get packed up then? You say that the order came through, you were going to Iraq.
Well, it didn't take us long. I think the regiment was... we didn't carry all that much equipment in those days. We were used to going up the hills, packing up that type of thing every 6 months. Mm. So I think in that week, everything could be done.
Did you have any idea of why you were going to Iraq? Was there anything, you know, in the way of a briefing about what you were going to do?
Yes, they expect the Germans to come through that way. That was because they'd been doing big pushes into Russia. And, of course, all the oil fields was the prize thing to have.
The oil fields in northern Iraq? The oil fields in northern Iraq?
Yes, and also those in Iran.
Right. So you've got some idea. How did you feel when you were told you were moving India from India and going off to Iraq?
Well, I think everybody was thrilled about it, really. Who's going to do something? That's what we thought. I mean, although we was going as a band, we were still going to be stretcher bearers if they went into action. That was still there.
And you were going into a more active theatre of operations?
Yes.
Had you been able to keep...
The Iraqis themselves were pro-German at that time.
And had you been able to keep in touch with what was going on generally in the war while you were in India once you got back from...
Well, yes, because we knew all about the collapse in France, Dunkirk and all that, which didn't help with our morale out there. We was even thinking we're going to be cut off. I thought myself, perhaps we can't get back at all. What will happen to us? Probably a good idea if we went to Australia or something like that. That's what entered my mind.
What about other people you knew? Did they have similar thoughts about the effect of Dunkirk?
Lost, you know, we didn't belong anywhere, and it was all wrong.
But things must have changed once the Germans invaded Russia, because then, you know, at least there was something.
Oh, well, we thought big things were going to happen then, when that came in. Now, incidentally, I will bring another part in. When we got to Karachi, onto the troop ship. It was in that list there where the troop ship was.
Yes.
Late that evening, a train pulled up on the dockside, and a large number of civilians were there. Tremendous amount of baggage, and they were put on board. And they were all Germans. Families, all that. Wasn't until afterwards I found out that they'd come from Afghanistan, from Kabul, and although the men were civilians, of obviously there was some probably high ranking officers there, or anything to do with the German government, and they had been doing their best to cause trouble in India. And pressure was brought on, I think, from Russia and us to Afghanistan, saying the Germans have got to leave Kabul, or else you're likely to be invaded. That was agreed, but because I was coming from a neutral country, there was guaranteed passage safely back to Germany. Not to be interned, like that. And eventually, when we landed at Basra, they were put on a train, and one of our companies accompanied them to the Turkish border, and they were landed over there.
So they went from one neutral through our territory in our shipping to another neutral
territory.
Do you have any idea how many there were, roughly?
Oh, least 40 of them.
What sort of impression did they make on you? What
well,
did they
that's
like?
Another thing is that the very next day I got called for, I said, Trump White, he said, get your instruments unpacked. Is you going to play in the ship's officer's mess? Also, there will be some Germans amongst them as well, as guests. So we was given a place at the rear of the ship to practice, make a program out, and it was also reserve place for the Germans to be. So we were playing amongst the Germans there, perhaps in their music.
Did you have anything to do with them at all? Or?
No, not actual fact, but I mean, we. I always remember we played the section from the Merry Widow, which they knew, and clapped us afterwards.
Sounds as though they were very polite.
Oh, yes, yes. And that evening we played down in the. For the officers there, there were several Germans there amongst them there, and that's happened on two occasions during the trip to Iraq.
Were there any special arrangements for segregating them or dealing with them on the ship?
No, they was only put on this part of the rear deck on their own, but we was there practicing our music. It's the only place that was available, I think. But we never spoke to them, but they listened politely to us and they seemed to enjoy it. Probably hadn't heard any for a long time.
Did you have any special orders about how to deal with them if they...
No. They just took it that we wouldn't converse with them at all. Mm. We didn't try to and they didn't try to. So.
What sort of age were they, these Germans? Were they all ages or were they...
Oh, I should say from between the ages of 30 and 50. They were old men, not really any younger than that, none, except a few children that were there.
Did any of them look like soldiers from the way they...
The military, yeah, some of the men did do.
They did?
Their bearing and all that type of thing. Yeah. I should imagine they were military.
But they were in civilian clothes?
They were in civilian clothes. Yeah.
How long did it take to get from Karachi to Basra?
Mm-hmm. 5 days, I think it was.
Mm. Was the ship travelling on its own? Or was
yes,
it,
no escort.
What sort of ship was it?
Not a troop ship.
Not a troop ship?
Yeah.
Mm. What happened when you got up to Basra?
Well, instruments were all put away and we had motorised transport there. We didn't have to march, but the weather was awful. It rained. And we went on. We went from one tented camp to another tented camp over several days before we got to just south of Baghdad.
How did you get ashore when you landed?
We went into a dockside.
And did you get any impression of the town of Basra?
No, and the docks didn't. I mean, everything seems so very desolate there. I mean, we from the docks we went straight out into the desert. That's what it seemed to be. And it seemed to be any decent roads at all. And I always remember seeing the motorcyclists that's skidding all over the place in this mud, what they're trying to drive through.
You were in three tunners, were you?
Yes.
Mm. Were they? Did they meet you at the dockside, or had you brought? Yeah,
no,
them
they was already there.
They were there on the dockside. Mm. And you said you were in a tented camp.
Yes.
Yeah. Was that just for transit?
No, just so we had to set up the.
Set up the tents each day,
yes. Till we got to this place outside of Baghdad, and then we stayed there quite some time then. Mm.
What were you supposed to be doing there when you were just outside Baghdad? Did you know what your role was?
No, not really. I think the battalion did start doing sort of manoeuvres out in the desert.
Yes.
But then something happened. I always remember Christmas Day there.
Right.
Still had mutton stew.
You still had mutton stew.
To eat, we did a shallow trench which you sat in and put your plate the other side and ate from it. That's what you had.
That was the dining room, was it?
That was your dining room. And that evening, whether it did end in morale or not, we played carols.